Let me first tell you that I speak with Babylonian accent. What I mean is my accent comes from the time, you remember when the tongues were confused? No, you don't remember. You're too young for that. But there was a time when the languages were confused. I was born in Ukrainian family in Yugoslavia, studied German, which I used in my watchmaking business, and then the Lord wrenched me from that successful business, and I went to France to study for ministry, and there I met a girl from California, so I came to Andrews, then I pastored in Canada, in French churches, and since 1983 I'm at Andrews University, and my wife, who has master's in English, and my son, who has BA in English, and our other son, who speaks perfect English, have fun listening to me by taking notes of my mistakes. So, if nothing else, take your paper and pencil and jot down my mistakes. When they tease me about it, and when I feel this is enough, I tell them, all right, you guys, you speak perfect English, but they still invite me to speak. And then they stop teasing me. You remember when for the first time you saw her or him? It was yesterday. Not really. It could have been in a college. And you noticed him because he looked almost exactly the way you wanted your beau to be. And he noticed you because you almost looked like the girl of his dreams. And then you play the game. Who is going to give in the last? But after a while, he came and sat at your table in the cafeteria. And the time passed like nothing. And then he invited you for a date. And that day was the longest day until 6 o'clock in the evening when you had a first date. Remember? And then some of us remember how some of those ideal, idyllic friendships dissipated. How one day, when it was a banquet, I remember particularly difficult event in one of our schools. We thought they were perfect, ideal couple. And the banquet was coming. And the evening of the banquet, the young man didn't show up. And that broke the relationship down forever. Now, this was not first time. In Genesis, we find the report in chapter 3, where God had a date every evening with Adam and Eve. He came at the cool of the day to meet with them, to commune with them, to talk with them. But one evening he came, on time, right place, nobody was there to wait for him. He called, he paged, but they were not there. God kept his promise, but humans didn't. I was born in Yugoslavia, child number 10 in the family of 11 children. My father was killed right 3 weeks before the end of the Second World War. I was then 2 years of age. And we were very poor. And I cannot describe to you, you cannot feel it unless you lived under it. It's one thing to go and buy round-trip tickets to Russia or round-trip tickets to Moscow or to Poland or somewhere. But when you have no passport and you're stuck, that is a different story. And then I spend time thinking about that kind of life. And when I tell some stories from my life, people say, how could you survive? And then I remember the words of Apostle Peter, where he gives the answer in 2nd Epistle, chapter 1 of Peter, where he says, His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence, by which He has granted to us His precious and very great, what? Promises, that through these you may escape from the corruption that is in the world because of passion and become partakers of divine nature. Promises kept us going. Promises keep you going. We cannot live without promise. You live on the promise of what physician told you. You live on the promise what banker told you. You live on the promise that the drivers on the road will keep to their side so you can freely go. We live on promises. And believe me, when you go into the kitchen, by the way, no refrigerator, we had no electricity in the house. The whole village had no electricity, no pavement, nobody owned the car, only one tractor. And that man was a rich man. And you open the drawers, and drawers are full of nothing in the kitchen. And cupboards packed with nothing. Nothing. On the shelves, only bottle of salt. That is it. We ate once a day a bowl of onion soup and one piece of cornbread at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That was it for about 3 to 4 years after the war. There were plenty of rich fields, but they were all infested with landmines. I could tell you a story of a twin, brother and sister, that were killed because they went to their field to till it so that they can plant something for food. When there is nothing in the house, when there is nobody to help you, you are staring into total hopelessness, except for the promises. I remember the hunger pains. Those are worst cramps you can ever experience. Horrible. I was jumping. I was thrown on a bed because of the pain. I remember also, you know, a child, I want to play soccer. So I would run, and all of a sudden I would just faint. No more gasoline in the tank. They would pick me up and bring me water, and then I would stagger home. How many times? And then they would take me to hospital. And I would stay in hospital for 3 to 4 weeks. Nothing was the matter with me. I was just hungry. So for 3 to 4 weeks, I would eat 3 times a day, imagine. Then home again to starve. I remember when I was in the army, they asked me to fill out the forms and to tell them which sicknesses I had. So I wrote to my mother, and my mother says, "Son, it's easy. Check every sickness except the fatal ones. No resistance." But there were several promises that my mother read to us, and I would like to focus on one of them. Let me first read the first one. When we felt we were totally hopeless, there is no possibility for the future. And this one was precious. Psalm 37, verse 25. "I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging bread." So my mother told us, you remain faithful to God. You are not orphan as long as you have Father in heaven. And He promises you will never beg for bread. And another promise is found in Isaiah 58. Verse 13 and 14. "If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it not going your own ways, or seeking your own pleasure, or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth, I will feed you." And then my mother stopped feeding. If you keep Sabbath, you are faithful, my mother says, to the will of your Father, He will feed you. One Thursday afternoon, a village crier came. You know what that is. In our village was one tall man. He always smelled after vodka. He had a drum in front of him. And he would walk on the street every Thursday afternoon. He would beat on his drum. And about every 10th house, he would stop. And then people would come out of the houses, go to listen to him, because he was our radio, our CNN, our newspaper, the only contact with what was happening outside. Maybe once a month, sometimes once in 3 months, we would go to the county seat about 13 kilometers on dirt road, or if we had to go to hospital. So this Thursday afternoon, the village crier comes and has a good news. He says, "A help has come from the United States. And I remember those big burlap bags with UNRA, big black initials, United Nations Relief Agency. And he told us, there is flour, powdered milk, powdered eggs, Crisco, and some other, and sugar. The distribution will be on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. My mother came home and read Isaiah chapter 58, verses 13 and 14. And then she said, "What shall I do?" And we were all standing around her. And unanimously we voted, "Mom, do not go." And then she started crying, relieved, but crying now, scared. "What shall I give you to eat?" I must add that every Saturday we had a dessert. And the dessert was the second piece of cornbread with a little bit of sugar on it. That was dessert. And we looked forward to it. And let me tell you another story so you can sense a little bit the situation. The brother next to me was 5 years older. He still is. He lives in California now. I can never catch with this guy in age. I used to be angry at him for that. We had two plates from which we ate at home. Two plates, which soldiers left behind them. From time to time, people would give us milk. And that was a big event. But because there are only two plates, we had to eat two at the same time from the same plate. So we would start eating, and then my older brother says, "Hey, you know, Miroslav, what?" I said, "What?" Rather than fighting with spoons like this, here he was drawing a line in the middle of the milk. He says, here is the line. I will first eat my half, then you eat." Well, you're laughing. I didn't know different. Until my older sister noticed what John was doing to me and protected me. Hunger knows no limits. Brothers and sisters took the us who were younger, on Friday afternoon we went into the garden, we hid behind the bushes and we prayed for our mother not to give up. Saturday morning came. We all went to church. Many people were not in the church. My mother was very sad. My mother and father started that church. And at the end of the war, there were 120 members in that village. Pastors would come once or twice a year. My father was ordained elder. He gave baptism. He gave Bible studies, and he baptized people. Pastors came only to bring him some material and to talk with them and to help us. So now my mother was left alone, mother in Israel. And she sees leading men of the church not there. In the afternoon was even worse. They came immediately at her and said, "Don't you come and ask us." So that Saturday night, we had no supper, but there was smell of food in every house in the village, except ours. The only thing that my mother could give us is God's promise, "I will feed you." Like a bridge, brothers and sisters, like a bridge, a promise carries us from the present, which is impossible, to the future, which is possible. So that as we go through the valley of death, we see life. Simply by counting on the promise of God. So that Saturday night, we went hungry to bed. And we did not know what's going to happen tomorrow. At 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody knocks at the window. My mother wakes up and says, "Who is this?" A man's voice identifies himself. It was a brother who lived about maybe 10, 12 miles from our village. And he was not a Seventh-day Adventist, but his wife was. He was baptized only towards the end of his life. But all his children are Seventh-day Adventists. Last September, I was in their village, and all of these young men are solid Seventh-day Adventist leaders in their village. And I will see them again in September. They insisted, this year is our 30th anniversary, they insisted for us to go there, and they will prepare a festivity for us. He says, "It is I." And she says, "Well, what are you doing here this early in the morning?" Well, he says, "Natalie, I had a dream." She says, "What kind of dream?" He says, "Well, I had a dream that you're in trouble. Oh, she says, you don't need to dream to know I'm in trouble. Just open your eyes and you will see it. No, no, he says, but I had a dream that you have some particular problem. He says, brother, every problem I have is very particular. No, 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 he says, but I went to sleep. Now, when there is no electricity, you go to bed with a chicken and you get up with a chicken. So he went to sleep with the sunset and it was late fall. And he was dreaming. He woke up his wife and he says, listen, honey, I had a dream. She says, what kind of dream? Well, he says, I was dreaming about Natalie. Yeah? And I was dreaming that she is in deep trouble. And his wife said, same thing. Yes, she is always in trouble. No, but she was in trouble and I felt guilty. Oh, she says, just go to sleep. It's just a dream. So he went to sleep, woke up again, wakes up his wife and says, hey, listen, I had a very similar dream, again Natalie, and again her problems, and again I felt guilty. Well, his wife says, hey, listen, go to sleep. If you dream it again, don't you wake me up. Go and see what's the matter, but don't go empty-handed. He went to sleep. He had a dream. He woke up. Quietly he dressed. And he says to my mother, Natalie, wake up the boys and open the gates. And my mother woke up my older brothers. They opened the gates. In he comes. And I rehearsed this now so that I remember. Two big bags full of potatoes. 100 pounds of flour. 50 eggs. 20 laying hens with a rooster. I don't remember now, something about 20 liters of oil. Sugar. All kinds of stuff. And attached to the cart, 2 years old milking cow. And as the sun was rising, he says to Natalie, to my mother, Natalie, where do you want me to put this? My brothers were too young to carry this, all of these burdens. So she told him where to put it. And you have to hide the food. Because the officials come to your house and check. You had to pay taxes. But in addition to that, you had to pay produce taxes. So that you can feed the communists. Who didn't know how to work on the fields, forgot as soon as communism took power. So she found a way of hiding them. And then she was crying when he finished. She was crying, she says, how am I ever going to return this to you? And you know, men don't like this. We like those emotional moments, but we just act kind of robust during those moments. He says, hey, listen, don't you Christians say you have received freely, you give freely? So my mother just cried and thanked him, and he left. And before he left, he said to my mother, prepare a breakfast. And I mean, breakfast. At 10 o'clock, somebody calls from the outside. Natalie! My mother comes out. They said, open the gate. She opens the gate. In comes another cart and the horse with the bags on which there was written UNRA. The communists brought our portion. And they said, Natalie, where do you want us to put this? So then she said, just put it here. She didn't want them to go anywhere else. As they were leaving, they were shaking my mother's hand. And they said to her, we knew you would not compromise your faith. I will feed you. I will feed you. You remember when you met him first time? You remember when you promised to him for the first time? You remember how you loved Jesus at that time? How is it between you and him? He is faithful. He is there. He will be there. There is a bridge over the troubled waters of the present and the future. My God is God of incredible promises. That's why I'm standing here before you, brothers and sisters. My prayer this morning is to remember our promise to him, because he never forgets his promises to us.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.